Welcome to Star of the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SLB Online, Fedcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, Hannah joins me. We have a telecast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 0444. That's 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Are you going to participate on the web? Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. And of course, you need to bring your Chrome or Chromium-based browser like Brave. And of course, if you want to, you can also join us on Twitch because we do a co-broadcast on Twitch. And that the finest there, just go to twitch.tv/SFUONCALL. It's SFUONCALL. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is SFUONCALL@gmail.com. That's SFUONCALL@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, same spelling of SFUONCALL on Twitter. That is the account there. Also, I have a personal account called Paul Franz on Twitter. That's PaulFranz. If you want to follow me there, that's great. Just a reminder that I like being Catholic. And, of course, I love my O's. No matter how they're doing. And also, of course, I have my business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames. And this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast and available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. They released Nexus number 17 in PDF form. You know, the old magazine, I forget what year this was. It was pretty old. I forget, it was in the 70s or 80s. I forget which at the moment in time. And also, Captain's Log number 54 supplement is also now available. With also a new mini is on Shapeways, a space spider, another thing that you can kill. Moving onward to the Sapphire Star Tournament, number 6. That one is going quite well, with 4 out of the 8 games being completed. One, the Andromeda, the 2 is already is gone, killed by a Fed. Big surprise. It's a die rolls. That's all it is. You know, if the Fed rolls well, the Andromeda's dead. If the Fed rolls poorly, the Andromeda can live and should be able to kill the Fed, as long as his die rolls hold up. You know, and the other one, which was me, successfully beat the Hydran. I was fortunate to live, only because of two things. One, the Hydran let me have 2 shots on his one shield. I busted it down with the TRHs and the phaser 2s. And then I had 2 more phaser 2s offside. I was able to fire again through the down shield to blow away both the Hellbores. And that, for the most part, is why I survived. If that wouldn't have happened, I would have been definitely dead. Though the Hydran did continue on and made definitely a game of it. It got close there with the fusions and the fighters and all. Oy, it's always difficult. The only thing since I didn't have the Hellbores, I didn't have to worry about dropping the rear panels, because of course with Hellbores, you drop the rear panels, it just goes right through and poof, you're screwed. It's got, in which case, it's all about timing. Moving onward to the library report, not much has been happening both in the regular third gen conversions and in the FedCom library. We've been dealing with new issues with the third gen library. You know, we're moving towards a new background from the background images that were previously sent by ADB. We're creating our own. And we think that it's going to do better in that there'll be a consistent look overall and a consistent size, which I think will be definitely a great benefit. And hopefully we can have a consistent positioning of the boxes to a certain degree. Obviously, we want the same idea as the ships themselves, which is hopefully position the boxes approximately where those systems would actually be on that ship. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's me, it's Barry, and that's it. So, as I mentioned, Barry.
Hello?
Hey, Barry, hey, how there. You doing?
Hey. Well, it's a lot easier to speak when I'm unmuted.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So, any case, of course, for years and years and years and years, people have a love-hate thing with this Andromeda. It's like, oh, it's such a cool idea, but, originally when it first came out, it was like everybody wanted to play the Andro because it was easy to win with the Andro because it was broken. It was just overpowered.
Well, the question is that the reason why they played it, or just because it was something new, something different?
It was different,
right? Which of course, being different by itself means that here's the one thing that always bugs me about people who don't like the Andromeda, and that is, they don't like the Andromeda because it requires them, at least the way I feel about it, it requires them to think differently. They can't use the same tactics that they're used to using against every other ship in the universe, where you have shields and then you have the shields define how much you have there. And of course, then there's the annoying thing, which is, of course, with the Andromedans, they have those PA panels. And with the PA panels, you no longer can easily see what is happening when it comes to defensively. How much damage, quote unquote, has been taken. It's like it's never been touched. You know, it's on the head thing. Now, obviously, that kind of thing could be better represented, I think, on the SSDs themselves. That could have been done better, I think.
You still know how much power is in the panels.
Well, you can, but it's not easy to see because of the normal panels. The normal SSDs didn't have an actual separate chart which measured energy at all.
Right.
So you just see you see the PA panels, and that you'd see. So unless the Andromeda player had a separate sheet where they showed the energy, you know, in like block format, so that it would be easy to tell how much, if you're towards the maximum limit of the panels or not, you couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Of course, there was the whole panel dump stuff, which they have rightly so to be upset at that. I agree there. But
so now just a curiosity. The whole idea for panel dumping, was that legal pre-Doomsday?
Yes, it was.
But nobody had thought of it until after Doomsday.
I'm not so sure about that. Here's the problem with pre-Doomsday, in my mind.
Well, there's lots of problems, but go on.
Okay. And that is that communication. The tactics and strategies, the only way those were disseminated was through ADB. You didn't have the internet back in the day.
Right.
Until you had internet and forums, even Genie was the first kind of online presence, Genie and CompuServe.
Yeah.
Those,
right.
That was quite a scenario. The meeting of giants. They had two dominators. Whew. It was nasty. Yeah, it was. That's a tough scenario for people to play in. But anyway, Yeah, in my mind, the problem was the disseminating the tactics that the Andromeda can use. Those things, because of the panel dump, if you didn't really understand things, was not obvious when you first read the rules.
Right.
It wasn't until you actually, someone actually, the only reason I knew, I found out about the panel dump was, wasn't until I met up with Paul Scott at Origins.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I had ever seen it. Before that time, when I was playing Andromedans in a fleet scenario, before the degradation and a lot of like all that crazy stuff happened, all the changes that happened at Doomsday, I was playing other things wrong about them too. Two things I was playing wrong. One, I'd only absorb the energy, and then I would only dissipate energy. That's number one.
Oh, you did. You didn't send it to batteries.
Oh, I sent it to batteries, but I didn't know about the panel dump.
Okay.
And also, there's one thing I was doing though, which was not in the rules, but I did this because I thought, well, you know, obviously they talk about balance. I think they talked about balancing the panels, but basically I would move energy freely from the front panels to the rear panels or rear panels to the front panels at the end of the turn.
Oh.
So that part, you know, is where I didn't cheat. It's just that I didn't know the rules. it's because I didn't know the rules is why that happened.
Right.
But there's some downside. Oh, there are actually some really good side from the pre-Doomsday Andromedans. Eek. But that was one thing we were going to discuss tonight, which is, okay, given the pre-Doomsday rules, which one thing we should do, I think we should do is definitely is talk about what those rules were like. What were the big differences that were brought in by Doomsday Edition or the Captain's Edition?
Okay, so the first...
Basically.
Well, the first thing was the PA panels were completely different in that you could first... I think it was at the end of the turn. Is that correct?
Yep.
At the end of the turn, you would first take one quarter of the power in your panels and send it to batteries.
No, it wasn't one quarter. It was 20%.
20%.
You can take 20% instead of 10%.
I thought it was 25%.
No.
I think it was 25%.
No, let me... Let me see if...
And then you could dissipate 2 points per panel, 2 points per box.
Here it is.
You could clear your panels in three turns.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you had...
Yeah, you're right. It was 25%. So at the end of the turn, the drawn player may transfer energy held in the PA panels to the batteries on the same ship or no more than 25% of the power in the panels may be transferred out by this method. Note that the power in excess of the capacity of the batteries cannot be transferred. Also, at the end of each turn, 2 units of power per panel, from each panel, because those boxes are considered separate panels.
Okay.
Each panel holding more than one unit of power can be dissipated into space. So instead of current rule, which is one, you had 2 points of power you could actually dissipate.
Right. And panels did not degradate.
Correct. And no leak.
Okay. No leak.
No leak.
Right. So let's say you had 6 panels in the front for your crate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. or a Cobra or something like that. So you have six paddles in front. So let's say you fill them up to 60 points. The end of the turn, one quarter, that's 15 points. So 15 points go to batteries. Another 12 points dissipate.
Yep.
Now you've got 27 points free in the paddles, almost half strength back.
Yep.
That's huge.
Oh, yeah.
The next turn, you've got 33 points in the panels. You send 25% to the batteries, which is, 8 points, and dissipate another 12. That's 20 more points. Now you're down to 13 points in the batteries. And the third turn, you can empty them out.
Right.
So they drained real quick, and they came back to full strength. The mm-hmm. problem with the Andro is that you could hit it, and now you've got a Andro with a lot of power. He can run away, and by the time you catch him, his panels are empty. You haven't even scratched him.
Right, but...
Meanwhile, he's...
But again, here's the one thing that always... Well, it kind of bugs me to a certain degree, which is that all that means is that you have to constantly, every single turn, you have to hit the Andromedan. Now, I'll agree that presents a difficulty, especially in a fleet environment, at least when it comes to the motherships that could displace the ships away. Now, when it comes to the satellite ships, they can be fast, well, but again, as an Andromedan,
the problem is if you have a large enough fleet, a small enough ship, you can blow it away in one turn.
Right.
And so if you had a Cobra, which is worth a lot of BPVs, it doesn't take more damage if you can do it all in one go to take it out than someone else's small ship. But the problem is if you can't get it all at once, they come back real quick.
Right. Understood.
Now, the other thing was that unlike other ships, you had... a thicker front, a thicker rear. So if you were able to ding it from...
Yes and no.
I know.
Again, if we all changed our ships, all of the Octane ships, all the Omegas, so instead of one shield per hex side, you had 180 degree shields, they'd be around the same thing. You'd have like a cruiser, which has 30 shields, on the 6, 1, and 2. You got a 90-point shield there.
Yeah. Right. Versus the 60-point Andromeda. So it does have less total shielding, but it's more concentrated than
Correct.
The Galactics, and it regenerates quickly.
That's the thing. That was the gotcha, which was it was able to regenerate rather quickly.
Yes. Yes. So the other thing, which was no big slouch, was that all TRs are TR heavies. There was no such thing as a TR light.
Right. Right. Well, we can get into the discussion about the feds as it is.
Yeah.
Because.
But I think any.
Well, the only thing I was going to mention about the feds, let me just mention this real quick, which is one of those things that they thought about early on, but it didn't implement. And if you know about this, if you read the P6 module, the playtest module, where they actually had the idea of light photons, and that was the one thing they thought about implementing, which is the idea of regular photons and light photons. The idea of light photons is you put them on smaller ships.
Mm-hmm.
So but they never did. What they did was they
until Omega.
Right. But even then, they finally later on, as of Doomsday Edition, they added the idea of Shock.
What?
In the Doomsday Edition, they added idea of Shock. You know, Shock values, i.e., if you had in the case like the Bismarck.
Oh, Shock, yeah.
The Bismarck heavy battle cruiser of the Fed. If you fired too many photons at the same time, you'd have to roll against Shock.
Yes.
You know, but before Doomsday, that the idea of Shock was not anywhere to be found.
Right. Yeah. So, what I was thinking about is what I'd like is something with the flavor of the Andromedans that get the basic concept there and give it some. So, what are the basic concepts of TAs? First, it provides a little more defense for that initial volley that you take.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take, say for a crate, you can take 60 points in a volley without taking any internals, as opposed to other ships where it's 30 plus. Next, you can, your PA panels can be a source of power.
You mean a direct source of power?
I believe. No, but it's a source of power because you can take it and when you fill them up, you can then take that power and put it in your batteries and then use the batteries for power.
Right, that's how the Andromeda.
So it's an energy. Right, so it's an energy source. So A, it's got a little more defense. B, it's initially for a single volley. B, it's got an extra power source, and C, it regenerates its shielding. Those are the three majors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I was thinking about was when I went from Doomsday to the modern version, they added leak, they added degradation, and they reduce the amount you can send to batteries, and they reduce the amount you can dissipate. And there's a lot of people who are saying, well, that really, really nerfed it. The other concept was that you could repair a non-broken panel to get rid of the degradation. I was thinking, what if you did it a little differently than the change from Doomsday? So what I had in mind was that at any point in the turn, you could transfer any amount of power from the panels to your batteries. So I'm in mid-turn. I say, I've got 10 points of empty space in my batteries. I'm transferring 10 points from my front panel into the batteries. Okay. I use those batteries to do stuff. Empty out 5 more spaces. The next impulse, I transfer another 5 points straight out of the panels to the batteries. Okay. There is no limit other than the size of the battery and what's available in the battery as to when and how much I can transfer from the PAs to the batteries. But when I transfer that, there's 50% degradation. So the degradation occurs only when I transfer the power from the PA panels to the batteries.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
That's a weird concept.
I know. I know, it's different.
Oh, definitely very different. And the one thing that I have to mention about that is that from a logic standpoint, it makes less sense. I mean, from pure logic, that, you know, the idea is that you forcibly take the energy out of the panel, and by doing so, instead of dissipating into space by absorbing it into the battery, you're actually damaging the panel because of that.
Correct.
Versus the way it is currently, which is when you actually take damage, part of that damage actually forcibly damages the panel, which makes more sense. Now, when it comes to your idea, I think the idea is definitely has some merit. The question is whether the issue is that even let's see how that would go.
Or better yet, let's say I have 10 spaces in the battery. I dissipate where I put 20 points from the panel to the battery. 10 makes it to the battery, 10 goes to Deg.
Right. Well, I'm thinking about how the whole thing would work in practice. What are the ramifications of doing that, of having it so that when you withdraw the power from the panels via transferring it to the battery. I'm assuming the same thing occur if you tried, with this rule change. Let me ask you a question. And that is, with this rule change, would you still be able to transfer energy at the end of the turn? Or would that also disappear? Would that disappear?
That goes away. This is instead of. At the end of the turn, you can dissipate.
Right, but that's it.
That's it.
Okay. Okay, so that... That is interesting. In that... It would tend to...
You can get power...
Well, yeah, I know that. That's what I'm thinking about. I know what you're getting at, which is, if you want to get the power out of the panels, it would cost you basically. It'd be a kind of a two for one deal, or for two basically. In that you get 1 point of power for every 2 points of power that's in the panels, and you cause 1 point of damage for every 2 points of power you quote unquote remove from the panels.
Right.
Oi. That would definitely. Okay, yeah. Okay. That would slow down the Andromedas, because the Andromedas would then, instead of transferring energy from the panels into the batteries, which you'd wouldn't want to do unless you really had to, it'd be more of an emergency thing other than a way the system worked. Because come on, why would you ever want to transfer power from the panels into your batteries if by transferring a point of power into the battery, it causes 1 point of damage to your panels. So every single time you want to extricate energy other than dissipation, you would cause yourself damage. It actually would reduce the amounts of energy that the panels
production
can absorb.
You have.
Yes.
Well, there's a very good reason. So somebody did an alpha volley. Okay. They filled up your panels. You have no space left. They turned, brought new weapons to bear. You're going, oh, I need to free up some space in the panels to absorb a little more damage, which is going to be incoming. I'll transfer some to the batteries, damaging the panels, but freeing up space to absorb more energy.
Right. But basically, you're freeing only half the amount that you want to free.
But it's better than nothing.
Oh, yeah, I agree. It's better than nothing. But if you have a 60-panel, 60-point panels, and you transfer 30 of that energy into, well, you transfer 60 points of energy.
Well, you could transfer.
Well, you transfer 60, but you only get 30 in your batteries.
Right.
You free up.
You
all
have
that
30
energy,
points left.
But now you only have a 30-point shield.
Yes. Yes.
It definitely would change the dynamic greatly when it comes to the Andromeda and PA panels and battery system and how it works. Yes. Because it would no longer...
You wouldn't need a 30-point battery. A 10-point battery would be viable.
Now, here's the change that would then incur. And that is, switch out those batteries for real power, for generated power now. Because the Andromedans... I'm not sure if you ever played them, Barry. But
I played Andromedans.
Okay, that means you've played it so that you know that if you keep up that high speed, you are draining your batteries every single time.
Yes,
you're sucking them down like you won't believe.
Right.
Therefore, to make it so that the Andromeda is not running at a very slow speed, because the batteries are basically reduced, and there's no reason for the batteries. You can have a five box battery. There's no reason to have special batteries at that point, because you can easily transfer enough power out of the. You might want a 10-point battery for a Dominator.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You just, the Dominator would have another
Dominator.
Would need another 10 power of ongoing power since the batteries would never be able to be refilled easily without causing damage to the ship itself. You would avoid that. Therefore, the ship the player would try to avoid transferring energy into the batteries. Because you're not going to do something that's going to hurt the ship itself.
Right.
So it's always any energy that goes into the panels, most of it is going to be dissipated.
Yes.
Which means that the Andromeda would need more power, more generated power, whether it's APRs or warp or impulse or whatever, to make up for the loss of available power that it normally would have.
Well, absolutely, it would need more power, which is okay, because you can't do a panel. Oh. No panel dumps anymore.
Right, no panel dumps anymore.
Right.
Because panel dumps would cause you damage. The only thing you might do is you might transfer the front to the rear. Is the only thing you might do.
Which would cause damage.
No, it will not cause damage.
Which would cause damage.
It's not, because it's not. You said the battery.
Any time. Well, okay. Or if it goes from one panel to the other. It would cause damage. So you could transfer from the front to the rear. Let's say you filled up my front.
At that point, you don't want to transfer the front to the rear. Because the only reason to transfer As it is, if you don't have, if it doesn't cause damage, the only reason you transfer the fronts to the rears, there's two reasons. One, obviously to clear some in the front. Two,
yeah,
to transfer to the rears, you allows you to dissipate more.
Okay, here's another thought. You can transfer from the panel to the battery or the other PAs, but every point transferred, for every 2 points transferred, you get 50% deck. So I have a 60 points in my front. I have a 10-point battery that's empty. 10 points go into the battery. 50 points go to the rears. Now, the rears can't hold 50, but, well, let's see. If I do, so, oh, sorry, I take 20 points out, 10 go to the battery, 10 go to deck. Okay, then the other 40, 20 go to the rears, 20 more go to deg. I've now got I've degged my front by 30 points. It's now a 30-point front, and I have 20 points sitting in my rear in full batteries.
Right, and to get that I out of the dissipation is going to cause you even more damage to your rears.
Well, the dissipation doesn't do degradation.
No, that's what I said. No, it said, you know, other than dissipation.
Yes.
So, Barry, that's one of those rules that I'm willing to bet you if they had switched it to be that way, they would just kill the Andromedas right there. No one would ever play them.
Well, let's think about this. You still need to give it a way of repairing the deck.
Now, there is one thing that I would like to still see and still stay intact. The Andromedan bomb.
What's that?
And that is where you, if, okay, one of the rules in pre-Doomsday was this. All the energy that's in the panels is added to the explosive strength of your ship.
Oh, yeah. So they nerfed that, didn't they?
Right. So what would happen is that when it comes to, if you really beat up on, let's say, a little Cobra, but you didn't kill it. Instead of running away, he runs right through your fleet.
And the mothership shoots him in the butt and blows him up.
Yeah, he could just drop his rear panels, have the mothership fire at it, and boom, it explodes, or even just end of turn. Because most probably at that point in time, the Cobra will not have enough power to keep up his panels, which means the panels have to drop any energy. You know, but then would be cause internal damage, and then it would, until it exploded, any leftover energy that did not cause internal damage would then be in the panels, and therefore would be added to the explosive strength of the Cobra as it blew up in the middle of your fleet.
Yes, and pre-Doomsday explosions had a large radius.
Oh, yes, they did. It was quite marvelous. I still remember to this day when we were playing, where I was flying. It was a fleet engagement with me having the Dominator. Actually, I had one Dominator and some other satellite ships, but also I had the Desecrator, Starbase.
Okay.
And the panels got full.
Oh my! Big.
And it go boom. It was like another sun. It just exploded. Because I had all these, and the thing is, I had all these satellite ships inside the Desecrator base, and I called catastrophic damage. So I even had a chance for them to emergency transport out. Because at that point, I still had power to do it. Because the amount of damage they did to it, it's like I'm calling catastrophic damage because I can tell that the amount of damage is way more than the number of internals and the whole desecrator base. So I'm calling catastrophic damage and get my ships out of there so that they don't get destroyed when the desecrator base goes boom. Because the problem with the desecrator base is that it doesn't have any phaser fours. Has TRHs, has phaser twos, has no phaser fours.
Oops.
So as a star base.
Well, were you able to transport them? But were you able to transport them outside the explosion radius?
Yeah, five hexes.
Barely.
Yeah, just barely. Yeah. And of course, then there's also the displacement devices. So I could, for those displacement devices that were on the desecrator base, I also could do it via displacement device too. I could send them out via displacement device.
Oh. Oh, wow. The enemy fleet got hosed.
No, the enemy fleet was fine because the enemy fleet was far enough away. It's just an example of the explosion being really, really big. I think I might have taken out some of the ships that were a little too close.
Okay.
But still,
it was, but in any case,
but it's one of those rules that it definitely needed to change in the Doomsday edition, you know, because it was like, I think full strength at range 1, 3/4 strength at range 2, half strength at range 3, and then quarter strength at range 4. I think I had that right.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Because I bought the rules for the volume 2.
Commanders and.
Oh, the Commander's Edition.
Okay.
I downloaded from Warehouse 23. So I had the rules for what they were for the Andromedans.
Hmm.
So I knew what we were talking about tonight.
Yeah.
I forget if, yeah.
But
That was also back in the day of when it comes to systems, one of the things they instituted as part of the Doomsday Edition is the closed power system.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning you could not use your batteries to charge a transporter that you never used.
Well, I think what it was is you couldn't have a tractor auction with a rock.
That's another one that was disabled too.
Something like that. That.
Yeah.
You there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hello? Yeah.
Yeah, but.
Yeah. For about a minute, I didn't hear you.
Okay. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So.
The whole idea was to make sure that the Andromedan couldn't waste energy and get things out of the battery, you know, in strange ways that in theory are for a non-Andromedan ship are completely legal. It's only because of the Andromeda had the ability to recharge, you know, refill the batteries during the turn that it made sense. It's just like currently in the online client. One of the things I have is that in the energy allocation form, I give you the ability to add energy into your phaser capacitor. Now, normally, you do not. This does not happen for a non-Andromedan ship. It could actually happen if someone wanted to recharge their phasers, the phaser capacitors, because they, you know, like on impulse 2, because they realize on impulse 3, they're going to lose all the batteries.
Right.
You know, that's one thing you could possibly do. But, you know, that is one of those rare occurrences, because normally you just say, okay, well, I'm firing those phasers directly from battery, and boom. You know? But even then, what you would do is you would use the energy allocation to add the power into the batteries, into the phasor capacitors, so that the number at the end would come out proper. So basically letting the client know what you're actually doing. Because by default, it calculates the energy that's withdrawn from the phasor capacitor when you fire a phasor.
Yeah. So my theory here was that I wanted to give some of the Andromedan flavor to it, to give you a reason to play the Andromedans, but to not nerf it the way that Doomsday did. Nerf it in a different way.
I think that's more to the point there. And that is nerfing it in a different way. Because I truly feel like one of the requirements of nerfing it your way would be that I have to change almost every single ship. Well, actually, they had changed quite a few ships anyway. Of the Andromedans to up their energy generation, how much they could do there, and decrease the number of batteries they had. Because at that point, there's no reason to have large battery capacity at all. Because
I was also looking at the
But you're also looking at what?
Well, first of all, you'd probably want to have more power for the Andromedans, mm-hmm. which actually helps, because one of their biggest problems is that they're such small ships that once you break through their protection, they get punched. Andromedans, full strength. I take a minor number of internals and no more ship.
Right, eggshells. It's like an Orion.
And most other ships have a gradual degradation. So the fact that you need more systems provides, and you have less protection, provides that slow degradation of the ship. It loses functionality slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to give it a little bit more. It should regenerate, because everybody can rebuild their shields.
Right.
But very slowly.
Right. Well, and.
But the
Okay, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. But the Andromedan should be able to rebuild its shields, but a little bit quicker. So what I'm thinking is that you can, for the degradation, let's say you have a damage control rating of 4. So then you could subtract 4 degradation per turn at the end of the turn from your panels.
At what cost?
No cost.
Okay, but it's not considered part of CDR?
No.
Okay.
No. So, and I don't think you should have CDR for repairing pals. So it's just... So let's say I have
you still need CDR for repairing panels, because if you actually destroy, you need to be able to repair it.
Yeah. But when you repair it, it has the degradation it had when it got destroyed.
No, I guess it doesn't matter. Yeah, I disagree on that point.
I'll go there.
I don't think that's a real issue there, really, of the degradation disappearing when you repair a panel that was destroyed, because it takes you, it's 10 points of repair to
You're right. Okay. So here's what I'm thinking. So you took a 60-point volley. So you have 60 points in the panel.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I have a 10-point battery.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, okay, 20 points. So 10 goes to the battery, charge that up. I have 20 deg on the panel. So now it's 40-point panel, but it's full. Mm-hmm. End of the turn, dissipate 1 point per.
So you change from the two to the one?
Yeah, I think we can go for, well.
No, I don't think so. At that point, I don't think it's viable at that point. Because because with the current system, the post, doomsday, you can transfer it for free. You have to do some mechanics, and it's a little skill to get it so you can do a panel dump. But you can get that energy out of it other ways other than dissipation. With your way of doing it, dissipation is the main way of getting things out of the panel.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So.
I think your scenario plays well, which is have it 60, you remove 20 out of the panels, which causes 10 degradation.
Right. But you're 10 for the battery.
Right, but then you can repair it 4 degs for free per
right.
Per turn.
Per turn. So at the end of the turn, I've taken the debt. So at the end of this turn, 60 points happens in the middle of the turn. I instantly pull 10 points out, or 10 go to the battery, 10 go to deg. So now I have 10 spaces empty. So it's it's a 50-point panel with 10 empty because it's lost 10 for deg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At the end of the turn, I take 12 points of dissipate. So now I have a 50-point panel with 22 space left. And then I repair 4. So now I have 26 that I can take.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable scenario. Overall, So I think at that point that's workable. Obviously, as we pointed out, you have to add more power to the Andromedans.
I think the math will work out easier.
Yeah, I don't think things, even adding the power, I don't think it would solve the shell problem, which I don't think we should solve that problem.
Okay.
Because that's a characteristic of the ship. It's just like the characteristic of an Orion ship. Same characteristic. Though, obviously the way the Orions get around that issue, one, they limit their combat, number one. But they can double their engines, therefore have the additional reinforcement so that they don't get internals. Except for
The degradation for Orion is on the engine side.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But as I said, I think
with the Andromedans, it would be the panel degradation would be everything.
Right, right. And I think the whole
would be
eggshell issue, I don't think that needs to be solved. I think that's just just the characteristics of the ship, and that's just the way it should be.
Yeah. Wow. I actually think that would, and I think the math for that would be a lot easier than the current system.
I assume it. Okay. Yeah, that'd be the same issue. I'm looking at the Terminator Mauler that can draw power directly out of the panels.
That would beg its own panels, though.
Right. Yeah. Which I'm looking
Yeah.
at the rule. I'm looking at the pre-doomsday rules for the Terminator Mauler, and it says, appearing in Y184, the Terminator appears to be the result of captured Romulan technology. I disagree with that. The reason why I say that is because of historically, the Andromedans, for the most part, never. There was no record of them actually modifying their ships based on their local opponent, in my mind.
Yeah. And I don't know where the Terminator Mauler came from.
Because,
That just seemed hokey.
right, if they truly did, I would say yes, the Mauler, technology, they stole it from the Romulans. And when it comes to, because if they did something like, oh, actually had PFs. Not the MWPs, which are they're more of a, oh geez, it's like a large, it's like a skiff. It's a better way of describing it when it comes to the size of the ship. It's really
Yeah.
small, and it definitely it's not meant to go into combat. It has some, you have some combat capable MWPs, but those are mainly designed for working around a base.
Yeah.
It's not really meant, or it can be, there might even be considered a large fighter. That's about as the best way I could describe. But there was never a PF, and which to me indicates that the Andromedans never modified their technology or their approach to building ships at all since the beginning of when they started the invasion.
Right.
So, I don't see it. I don't see them actually. That's why I don't think they got it from the Romulans. I think that it's a technology that they got some from someplace else, possibly. But I
Yeah.
think side, okay, just let's stop chasing that rabbit. Continue on, which says it can draw up to 20 units of power per turn, but this can be done on one impulse or a few points at a time per several impulses directly from the PA panels into the Mauler weapon. This is treated as power from batteries and is accomplished by simply changing the bookkeeping entries. Other rules, for the Mauler apply. So,
Right.
yeah, that would cause that kind of degradation, which would be interesting because of it definitely would make the Terminator and any Mauler that the Andromedas had more effective
Oh,
because of it would,
endlessly effective.
right, it would actually no, oh jeez. It wouldn't change the effect, actually it would reduce the effectiveness. Because currently the current degradation that you have for the panels when it comes to the Mauler is that it's only 20%. 20% of the damage
Right.
taken is
Yeah. This
degradation
right.
versus this one could be up to 50% of damage taken could be converted into degradation. So you'd
Well,
have
not only
less.
that, but less power available
Right, which makes it would mean less power
to
available
feed the
actually used by
Mauler.
the Mauler. Yes.
Yes, and you've damaged your panels. That makes that ship a lot less effective.
Yep.
But as you pointed out, that's a ship that shouldn't exist anyway.
No,
And if
I don't think it shouldn't exist. And obviously, any Mauler, What's the reason for a mauler? There's only the main reason to even have a mauler is for one thing: attacking bases.
Taking out bases.
That's the main reason to have a mauler at all. Because of the arcs, you know, the limited arcs that it can actually fire using. You know, you're not gonna fire this at a ship. You know.
No.
Definitely should be. And she, but I think your idea it has some merit. It has definitely a different approach. I agree that obviously, as I said, I think we both agree that the Andromes would need more power. But
oh yeah,
we've already multiple times repeated that the same idea.
They've always needed more power.
Yeah. Well, the whole idea of the way the Andromedan system worked or works is that it takes the damage that it is given to it, says, thank you very much. I'll now transfer that into my battery somehow, and then I'll be able to use it against you. And that's why the Andromedans, when it comes to the amount of power that they currently generate, is so much lower than what they actually need to actually run the ship. And Lord knows, oh my, I still remember the one time I had an Andromedan Dominator, full complement of satellite ships, full complement, and after. To actually do the one tactic, there's two tactics when it comes to fleet engagements when it comes to the Andromedans. Number one is pre-deploy your satellite ships at a distance. So basically, when you come into the scenario, your satellite ships are already deployed. They're basically, they run out in front of you. They're really fast. You do that so they can be really fast. The other way of doing it is the pop way of deploying them, which is you have the big masculine, you know, big mothership come in, pop out their puppies, and then like four impulses later, it can actually fire. Now, the max speed that can go is speed 10. So, you're gonna do them so they're relatively close to the invading fleet. Now, the tough part about that, obviously, one is that the satellite ships, after they pop out, they are not gonna be going very fast, so they're not gonna really be able to run away from the incoming fleet that much, you know. So you kind of have to see what survives after the initial punch, and hope. That they enough survive, and that's the whole idea of satellite ships anyway. They're throwaway. They're the whole idea of attrition ships basically. Now, the big problem with that though is that when the Dominator does that, the fastest speed you can go is speed 15. If you want have all the rest of the systems running, and then of course the Dominator is a 1.5 cost movement ship, and you even have all the batteries fully freaking charged to get those stinking satellite ships out, cost you so much power per satellite ship that it drains your battery or pretty much close to it. You know, you have to between your battery and your and you generate power, you know, because you're also charging your own weapons, you know. What else? So having more power is always a good thing. But I've read that. The thing is, I've read about that pop tactic before. You know, it's this is a tactic that you can use. It's like yes, but why in God's green earth would you? It's like, I want to tell these people, it's like, have you actually ever tried using it in actual game, in a game? Because of, if you look at the amount of power that you have to use, you're not going to be flying around. You're not going to have your, because what you really want, you want your mothership flying around the speed 20, between 20 and 24, in my mind, because you want to be able to throw them out there, have them hit, have them start to run away, then you pick them up and you run away. That's what I envisioned that to be, that happened. But the amount of power that costs is just way too much. And of course, then you have to have the proper number of transporters. And to do that, in some cases, it requires that instead of using transporters, you use your displacement devices to push out your satellite ships.
Which is deadly, because you need those displacement devices. Because what you really need the displacement devices for is to say, I'm only going to fight part of the enemy fleet.
Right.
At a time.
Yeah, but...
And the displacement devices, they're to say, okay, yeah, I want to fight that ship and that ship, but those other ships, I want to make them further away so that they're not... Yeah, so I don't have to fight them at the same time.
Oh, yeah. The whole idea of using the displacement device to break up the fleet, you know, the opposing fleet, that's always a good idea. Obviously, you only have so many of them, so that that tactical can...
Yeah,
it's great. It's good if you can actually hopefully have it work so you can pull out, like, one ship... displacement device and this, and then be able to attack that one ship. Now, obviously, you've got a 2/3 shot of it. I think I calculated that right, 2/3, because of it's the direction's random, but you have a certain amount of control in that you can say that, okay, if it goes, if I roll direction, let's say one, then it's going to go direction 4. So
yeah,
you're going to have it so that you have a 2/3 chance of actually getting closer to you, or at the very least,
right,
you know, away from the fleet.
Yeah.
Which I think is definitely the point in that case.
Mm-hmm. But it's all about spreading out the enemy fleet.
Right. Right. I think SFB did a disservice overall. Now, here's the one thing I understand. I understand that each hex is a lot of space.
Sure.
But I think that does a disservice to certain things, because with no rule, that limits the number of ships in a hex, you have the issue with, of course, super stacks, where you have basically all your ships in one hex. All, like, 10 ships are all in one hex, and you just go, choo, 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 and you move around. Now, the IC was not designed for a super stack. It was designed for actually having a fleet that was...
I know. They said, oh, we'll spread it out. And I've tried that as a solitaire scenario. I took the proverbial 10 ship ISE fleet set up the way that Commander's Edition, so I bought Commander's Edition Volume 3. It's like, okay, let me try this ISE. So, okay, they recommend, you know, a 10 ship fleet with a dreadnought and, okay, this echelon formation. And it's like, oh, who am I going to... Oh, I'll take some Klingon ships of approximately the same BPV, run it as a solitaire. And I had a compact Klingon fleet, and it just took that ISC fleet and just ripped it to shreds. It was pretty ugly.
Understood.
Yeah. Now, where... The thing that would have help the ISC with their echelon tactics. And I think it probably would have worked better if the spacing was smaller, and say 2 hexes instead of 4. But I think where what would have helped a lot was the Commander's Edition explosions, forcing everybody to keep their ships a little distant.
I was just thinking the same. I was thinking the same thing. Is that the reason why you got the super stacks is there's no, if your ship blows up in that super stack, not much of a big of a deal. Yes, basically right. you've just caused an explosion that's going to damage every single ship that you have. But the amount of damage that's done to that ship is a heck of a lot less than it was in the Commander's Edition.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyhow, I think I need to... Yes. What were you going to say?
Yeah. No. You're right. Yeah. Oh, okay. So this is an interesting discussion.
Yep.
Of course.
Would you be... Do you think you're going to be available next week?
Most likely.
Okay.
Most likely.
Because I got a topic
that... Well...
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Let's see, because... Well, I don't know. Ugh. I don't know if next... I'm not sure how this project is going to go.
Okay.
I'm in California right now, and it's possible that they may say, okay, at some point I fly home, and that might be Thursday.
Okay. Well, let's do this then. Next time you and I
If it is, if it is a flying day, then I'm probably not going to want to be on TalkShoe because I'll be...
Oh.
Seeing my wife for the first time in over a month that day.
Oh, and it's the same thing. She frowned on you talking to me instead of talking to her at the very least. So let's just do this. Next time that you and I are together, i.e. on TalkShoe, the topic that I want us to discuss is Nicosians.
Okay.
I think that's one of the empires we have not talked about.
Yeah. Now, where did they come from? Was that from?
There's a
where do they? I'm not.
Playtest module.
Is it a...
N107.
Is that the Triangulum Galaxy or something like that?
I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it was N107. That's not quite it. Okay. Ah, this is probably it. Yep, that's it. Okay, the Nicosian Concordance. It's got some really interesting systems. Okay. Encounter at Nicosia. Obviously, it's within the Alpha. The Alpha Octant, because it's well, not necessarily. It's Federation CA, which you never know. I'm looking for description of. Whew. Interesting. According to homeworld is in a non-rotating neutron star binary type M3. Okay. Okay, according to this. Okay. Didn't say exactly where. Okay. Two factors doom the Cosians in their search for a new homeworld. In a pattern of indicative of an imminent supernova explosion, the Cosians became aware of the situation with their discovery of warp travel, began the desperate cycle of expansion and exploration. Indeed, had the threat to their home not existed, the Cosians might never have left it. Two factors doomed the Cosians in their search for a new homeworld versus the anticipated non-rotating neutron stars are very rare and almost impossible to find due to low stellar emissions. And the second was a group of the Cosians who were cut off from their fellows, something virtually unheard of in densely populated homeworld, go insane. The Cosian starship's crews became, in the eyes of their fellows, dangerously chaotic. Yet the search for a new homeworld required such sacrifice to be made, and Concordia sent out ships. But I'm knowing, okay.
Where did they come from in terms of what module was this?
This is, it's only available in a playtest module. It's R107, Captain's Module R107.
Okay, not familiar with that one at all. Yeah, I don't know the rules. I don't know the ships.
Well, that's why I'm giving you a heads up.
Okay.
Go to Warehouse 23, spend $5 and download it.
Oh, boy. All right. Send me a link and I'll find it.
Okay. They're very interesting. I think you'll enjoy them.
Okay. I will spend the money.
Is there what's called collapsium armor. And that armor is not like normal armor. What it is it's an internal reduction factor, basically. After you get through the shields, then the number of internals that are done are reduced by the amount of armor that you have. Now, that armor is not destroyed by those internals. It just reduces them. By the number of points of armor that currently exist. And the only way to destroy the armor is through excess damage.
Okay.
So it's very...
Which means that by the time the ship is about ready to be destroyed is when the armor starts to go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So basically, how much armor do you have? It's
arc-based armor. Let's look at the heavy cruiser. The heavy cruiser has what? 10 points of collapsing armor in the front half, and has 6 in the rear half.
Okay, so if you took a 10-point volley. Does that mean you took nothing, or correct. How does that work?
Yeah, basically, you take no internals.
So if you took a 20-point volley, do you take how much internals? 10 points?
Yeah, you take 10 points. Assuming that assuming it's a downshield, on a downshield, yes.
On a downshield. Okay, so basically, it's you subtract whatever. Okay.
And then there's skip warp. It's interesting. I think you would find it interesting to discuss.
Okay. Oh, I have something that would be of interest to you.
What's that?
So this past weekend, I went to visit my good friend, who's my college roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And on Sunday, his whole family took me, and I went, accompanied his whole family. It was the first time I've ever been to a Catholic mass in my life.
Wow.
Yeah. That was fun.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed that.
I'm glad you did, because I find Catholic masses are very rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
now this one was outdoors. It was
right,
basically in a parking lot.
Right, if you're in California, they've been doing outdoor masses. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Cool. Cool.
That was fun. Yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go. And I will hopefully see you next week. If not, the week after that, maybe not after that, whenever I see you next.
Right. Okay.
Okay. See you, Bert. Bye. Okay.
Bye. Bye.
So we had a discussion about whole idea of a redo, another way of fixing the Andromedans, instead of having the degradation being on the damage, the degradation is when you try to extract the energy from the panels. I'm assuming the whole idea is that it's such a violent thing to do of extracting instead of letting it just gently dissipate. That's what causes the damage. So, interesting idea. As I pointed out, I think the big issue there is power. The Andromedans would definitely need more power because of batteries. Now it would be less useful, because that's the whole idea of having the big batteries, is so that you could actually extract, you could transfer the battery, the power from the panels into the batteries. That's the reason why you have the large batteries to begin with. And actually, it completely changes the dynamic of the PA panels to battery to the whole energy system of the Andromedans. So, would I want that? I don't think so, because as the thing is that I think it would change the complete and utter feel of the Andromedans when it comes to the energy system. You know, it completely changes it. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.